Hello, friend. This is Quinn Elizabeth. Thank you for choosing to listen to the hour-long version of Accepting the Ashes. I wrote and narrated my story in the months after my father's death in 2004 in the hopes that veterans, as well as their loved ones, might receive some solace in hearing how post-traumatic stress affected my family for almost 40 years after my father's experience in the Vietnam War. I can see now that combat-related stress needs to be dealt with. It doesn't just go away. To order this story as a 60-page illustrated book, or to find out about wholesale and military prices, please contact me through acceptingtheashes.net. If there is one thing I hope you take away from hearing my family's story, it's this. If you are a veteran, and you feel you have symptoms that might be post-traumatic stress to any degree, you are not weak. You are having normal responses to trauma and combat stress. I urge you to be brave and ask for help. Those who matter will support you. Our culture is now coming to realize that war causes both physical and emotional wounds. So please, don't wait 30 years to heal the emotional wounds of war. Hello, friend. This is Quinn Elizabeth. Thank you for choosing to listen to the hour-long version of Accepting the Ashes. I wrote and narrated my story in the months after my father's death in 2004 in the hopes that veterans, as well as their loved ones, might receive some solace in hearing how post-traumatic stress affected my family for almost 40 years after my father's experience in the Vietnam War. I can see now that combat-related stress needs to be dealt with. It doesn't just go away. If there is one thing I hope you take away from hearing my family's story, it's this. If you are a veteran and you feel you have symptoms that might be post-traumatic stress to any degree, you are not weak. You are having normal responses to trauma and combat stress. Consider post-traumatic stress an injury. So I urge you to be brave and ask for help in dealing with it. Those who matter will support you. Our culture is now coming to realize that war causes both physical and emotional wounds. So please, don't wait 30 years to heal the emotional wounds of war. In a time of war, what happens once a soldier comes home? Accepting the Ashes, A Daughter's Look at PTSD. My father died suddenly and unexpectedly in 2004, and as I went through the boxes of papers of his life, I realized that he had a story to be told. And since he was not able to tell it, I decided I needed to. He died at the age of 62, young really by today's standards, but his spirit was old from his life experience. In 1964, when he was 23 years old, he enlisted in the Navy. My father volunteered to go to Vietnam twice. I am a combat veteran's daughter, and this story is about a veteran's experiences, mostly after combat. My father's story is of interest now because we as a people are once again at war, and like in wars of the past, combat veterans are now having experiences similar to those of my father's, and I feel I need to give voice to what came of it, post-traumatic stress disorder, as well as where PTSD took him and my family. I am not a psychiatrist. I am a daughter with 36 years of experience watching a man with a quiet, broken heart. And I am a woman who has the perspective of one who has just looked into the deepest recesses of her father's heart and mind, and there are some things that need to be said. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a psychiatric disorder that occurs when a person is exposed to a traumatic or life-threatening event, such as war, assault, sexual assault, natural disasters, or disasters in general. Symptoms include panic attacks, nightmares, insomnia, hypervigilance, flashbacks, outbursts of anger and irritability, concentration and attention problems, and the inability to relax. From this description, there are many ways in which a person can be left with symptoms of PTSD. War trauma is unique because in combat, stress is created by many experiences. The fear of death, the stress of not being able to trust the civilians around you, seeing your friends and allies get hurt or die, the guilt of survival, and finally, the feelings associated with being ordered to kill others, even when the others are the enemy. Since the Vietnam War, PTSD has become a term that many people are familiar with. But it seems that intellectually knowing that combat trauma stress is real does not alleviate the symptoms for those who experience them. Hearing about soldiers and their families who are calling out right now for support breaks my heart because unless every soldier is offered all the help they need in coming to terms with combat trauma, the pain continues, and it is passed on through who knows how many families. I speak from experience. For now, the short version is this. My father volunteered to go to Vietnam after college. He was a lieutenant junior grade. He lived through the first tour, so he signed up to go again, this time with Special Forces. A year later, he came home, immediately started a family and a career, then attempted to put his warrior past behind him. However, his past wouldn't leave him alone. While he told me a couple of years before he died, "I know now that I drink to numb my feelings," he drank alcohol more consistently and heavily over the years and became more emotionally distant from his growing family. Even though I remember him as a kind man and a good father, 15 years after his war experience, he and my mother separated, splitting our family. After the painful divorce, the relationship between father and children was, in many ways, severed. I reestablished intermittent contact 10 years ago as he was sliding down a slippery slope of alcoholism, which had led to him losing his career. He was also riddled with feelings of loneliness and tormenting guilt about not reaching out to his sons, as he always told me he wanted to. When he could no longer pretend that his middle-class life wasn't in shambles, he began to admit and accept the role that his Vietnam experience had played in his life. Then he had to go through the administrative process of getting help from the Veterans Administration. 2 years before his death, I found my father alone in his apartment, looking horrible. This was by far the worst that I had seen him. I could tell that he was at the end of his proverbial rope, and he was deciding to live or die. I insisted on taking him to the VA's alcohol diversion program that very moment, because he had just recently got his first ever DUI. Once there, I watched my father as he sat across from a gray-haired veteran and substance abuse counselor. Immediately, this man began talking to him about Vietnam, saying things like, "I know how you feel. You can't sleep and you feel guilty, right?" The dumbfounded look on my father's face said so much. 30 years after his war experience and after a couple of alcohol diversion programs, he still felt that his problems were only his failings, that he was weak and he just couldn't handle it. Obvious to me, but an amazing revelation to him, he was not alone in how he felt. This humbling experience helped give my father the strength to get a second wind, and in his last 2 difficult years, he was able to look at much of his past. The summer before he died, I spent 5 days camping with him. I was quietly shocked to hear him tell stories about Vietnam, saying over and over, "I've never told this to anyone." I was grateful that he could finally speak them, and that he felt he could say them to me. As a strange gift, my father kept every paper relating to his life. While going through the boxes after his death, I found documentation of everything: his youth, his warrior phase, his family years, legal battles, and his fall into a deep well of emotional pain that he had been able to keep at bay as a younger man. Through reading these papers, I was able to step into his world, which I had not known before. For years, I only saw him occasionally because alcohol and sadness had overtaken his ability to hold his life together, and it was just too painful for me to watch. However, we were both given a chance to heal old wounds. Little did I know it was the last chance before he died. I'm glad I took the opportunity. I would imagine that just about everyone has some unresolved issues with their father, veteran or not. So I feel blessed to have watched my father, in his older years, learn to understand how a phase in his young life fundamentally damaged him and those around him, even though he didn't want to admit it. In his last few years, I got to know him as a man, and I realized the burden he was carrying alone, without really knowing he was carrying something. While I feel resolved with my father, I feel an immense sadness about how things turned out. I wonder, what if things were different? What if the culture supported, even insisted on my father's healing and all the others like him? So now he's gone. But there are many more men, and now women, just like him, who are in a faraway land telling themselves everything will be all right when they get home. Once home, they do the best they can to get on with life. But what happens when the memories don't go away? What then? What about the wives and the parents and the children who don't know what to do with the intense feelings being displayed? How do we all deal with our loved ones when they have to come to terms with killing other human beings for our society? This is why I write to you. My father is one version of the future of your soldier, your loved one, your neighbor or client, or you, 30 years from now. I have some pieces of advice, some ideas that have come from my experience, and I offer them to you, to anyone who might find them to be helpful. Your soldier is my father. I am your daughter. We are all in this together. Pieces of the puzzle. It is important to say that each person is unique, based on personality, circumstance, and support. Every veteran's experience is as individual as they are. So there are no rules per se, but if we look for the answers not within a book of rules, but from within the truth of each person, and we admit that painful feelings want to be resolved, that human beings want to be at peace, we can find an answer that fits for each individual, and that helps the society as a whole. Also, there are some men and women who are comfortable with being a professional soldier. Let's call them career warriors. I'm talking here, however, about term soldiers. Ones who experience a phase of warriorship and then re-enter civilian society. It is also important to mention that today, as contrasted to Vietnam, the United States does not have a draft. To take a quick look at our military forces, as stated earlier, some joined the military because it was their life dream to be a soldier. Some became soldiers as a response to the attacks on September 11, 2001, and other men and women joined the military to enhance their personal life, through education, benefits, travel. And while each soldier is a great patriot for answering the call of duty, many did not sign up specifically to fight in a war. Any war. Whichever camp you or your loved one may belong, please accept the following concepts as ideas to help your family assess any pain that remains from the war experience, now or in the future. For those of you whose loved ones have not yet returned, consider yourself recruited as chief sentry and support coordinators for years to come. Finally, let's agree that the military is a male environment. This discussion affects and refers to women as well as men, but since women soldiers are trained in a male-oriented system, I will use the pronoun he. But if you are a soldier sister, I'm talking about you as well. Often, I experience constant shelling from mortars, artillery, and sniper fire. The screaming of the wounded and terrified, the sickly sweet smell of morphine, and the sight of a base watchdog bringing a human femur to the medical bunker as a retriever dog would do will be with me forever. That's a quote from my father's Veterans Administration PTSD assessment questionnaire 30 years after Vietnam. While there are 1,000 things that could be helpful to a veteran and his family, I have consolidated my experience into 10 ideas to think about when dealing with potential PTSD symptoms. After, I list 5 things to keep in mind as one moves towards healing. Number 1. It is safe to assume that anyone who has experienced combat has PTSD to some degree, whether they would admit it or not. The negative effects of PTSD depend on a person's personality, life circumstances, and how much support they have. Anyone who is close to a veteran must be prepared to deal with secondhand PTSD, meaning you will experience aspects of what your loved one is experiencing, whether they openly speak of it or not. Understand that if you marry a combat veteran, either before or after combat occurs, you are enlisting in a psychological challenge, so pay attention. Whether you marry or partner with a soldier, then he goes to combat and comes home to you, physically wounded or not. Or if you meet and marry him after he returns from his tour of duty, remember that even though the soldier wants to get on with his life, once he is home, his war experience is not over. If you are wondering if someone has PTSD, pay attention for talk and behavior that are indicators. In addition to symptoms listed before, look for signs of depression, anger, being emotionally reclusive and non-communicative. To be honest, many men exhibit above-listed symptoms even if they've not been in war. My father, when he finally decided that he did exhibit signs of PTSD, received a 10% post-trauma disability from the government. At the time he died, he was receiving 50%. I read an article in the LA Times recently called Trained to Kill, Not to Cope by Charles Duhigg that described how the military admittedly offers no training in emotionally handling battle and killing. The following is a quote from this article. "The idea and experience of killing another person is not addressed in military training. Training's intent is to recreate battle, to make it an automatic behavior among soldiers." Colonel Thomas Burke, Director of Mental Health Policy for the Defense Department. The reason my father signed up for a second tour of duty was because he lived through, to use his word, an exhilarating firefight towards the end of his first tour. The emotional rush that he felt as a young soldier was so great that he volunteered to go to Vietnam again, this time in Special Forces. Little did he know how these experiences would linger with him as an older man, back in the world. Number 2. Partners and loved ones, especially women, cannot expect discussion about painful past experiences. I have heard many wives and girlfriends say that they have asked their loved one about their war experiences and received an answer like, "How would you know how I feel? Only a handful could understand and they're dead. I don't want to talk about it." Or, "You don't need to hear about that." We all must understand that male culture does not encourage discussion about emotional pain, period. So why should we expect our men to talk openly about things that are to them, or you, vile and horrifying? Whether their silence comes from a desire to protect their loved ones from unpleasantness, their own feelings of shame, or that they would want to put up a mental block, each veteran needs to find a way to come to terms with his own feelings. If he cannot talk to loved ones, he needs someone to talk to, someone who will understand and is capable of dealing with this kind of pain in a way that promotes healing for our vets, because an unhealed veteran is everyone's problem. Growing up, I have no memories of my father speaking of his war experiences. Honestly, looking back, because he was in the Navy and I didn't know any better, I thought he simply sailed around the ocean in a ship when he was in the military. It was only when I was 18 years old and I went to see the movie Platoon did I begin to understand what my father might have gone through. My mother's experience was that during her 17-year marriage, he never talked about it. Can you imagine never talking about such a formidable experience with the person closest to you? There was one time, within a few years of his return to civilian life, when my father woke up out of sleep, screaming that he had killed someone. The next morning he denied that he had said it. It's amazing to me now, looking back, that the one thing that affected my father so deeply and that caused so many devastating problems for 3 decades in my family was never discussed. Alcoholism always got the blame, and it was alcohol that caused so many pains, but the underlying issue was why my father drank. It was the family secret, apparently even to him. Finally, my father did talk to me. As I mentioned before, the summer before he died, he sat with me around a campfire, telling me stories that I had never heard before. After each confession, he said, "I've never told this to anyone." Even though he probably had spoken of these things before, I felt that something important was happening because he was confessing to me, his first child and only daughter. The more soldiers ignore their emotions and behave like trained machines rather than thinking people, the more you invite PTSD. Dr. David Spiegel, Stanford University School of Medicine. Number 3. Many times, suffering people cannot express their pain and won't seek help, especially men. I admit that this is a gross overgeneralization, but it needs to be said anyway. Men in our culture are not encouraged to express their feelings, especially sadness, confusion, frustration, and pain. I have heard men say they worry that expressing such emotions admits weakness and leaves them open to vulnerability, possibly even violence from other men. Our culture teaches boys this, the military definitely promotes this, and so when men find themselves unsure or in pain, they may feel overwhelmed by their feelings. I believe that we need to admit this cultural norm to understand why our men might not want to seek help when it is truly needed. My father said when he was discharged from the Navy, he wanted out so badly he didn't want to call attention to any potential problem or even ask a question. "Yes, sir, no, sir, get me out of here," was his attitude. It was over 20 years after his war experience, when he was not a young man anymore, that he admitted that he might have some problems, both physical and emotional. He began to admit to himself that his hearing was severely damaged, and while he did not admit it earlier in life, he knew it was from being exposed to loud explosions while in the Navy. In 1991, he petitioned for a hearing loss disability to pay for hearing aids, which he could not afford, and he was denied. Apparently, since my father had never said anything before, the government officials did not believe that the hearing loss was related to his soldier experience so long ago. I knew that my father always had trouble hearing, but while growing up, I thought it was just who he was. I remember feeling irritated by having to constantly repeat myself. "Pardon?" he would ask over and over. However, when he finally admitted to himself that he couldn't hear the phone ring and he bought one of those phones that lit up when it rang, I decided I needed to help him get help. So when he set up another meeting to appeal the earlier VA decision, I went with him. I listened to my father tell the officials, rather humbly, that since he worked in an office environment during his professional life, he was able to turn up the phone amplifier and ignore that he might have a problem. At the end of that meeting, he told them that he had resisted for years asking for help from the military, but he decided that since he had served his country, it was okay to ask for help. The commission tested his hearing, he had over 50% hearing loss, and they approved his application. I share these personal stories because there are many, many others out there just like my father, and I feel for all the daughters and sons who don't and won't for a long time understand why their daddy and family is in pain, yet won't admit it. Many who are in pain, yet do not want to admit it, try to hide their feelings from the public world so they can say, "See, everything's okay." So your loved one may hide behind alcohol or some other pain medication, or put up a mental block, and want to continue in the everyday world. The past is the past, they may say. But pain doesn't just go away. It must be dealt with. I'm sure we've all heard stories of families that look pretty on the outside, yet they are falling apart on the inside. So remember that PTSD is most apparent to the closest emotional relationships. There are many cases, unfortunately, of veterans' emotional distress being brought into the public eye. Timothy McVeigh, who was a Gulf War veteran, being a very drastic case. My father ended his career in the investment industry when he came to meetings drunk and said inappropriate things. Needless to say, he was asked to submit his resignation. While people do act out in public, most people experience PTSD in a private way. Their public appearance can be held together to some degree or another. So, wives and girlfriends, be aware of warning signs within your loved one, and yourself. Remember, if you are with someone who has combat experience, you have enlisted in dealing with PTSD as well. As a daughter of someone with such problems, I spent years healing the pain I experienced from growing up with a broken-hearted man, his alcoholism, and especially that he left the family because of divorce. From my experience, I have learned that healing is a vulnerable, energy-requiring endeavor. It is not easy to heal oneself and one's family, but it is the most important thing we can do. As a culture, we understand that it takes time and care to heal a physical wound. Now we, as a culture, need to learn that emotional wounds are just as real. Number 4. When a soldier does not come home from battle, their children are most at risk. My father enlisted for a second tour in Vietnam because he lived through an exhilarating firefight the first time he was there. To many, that may seem like a strange reason to re-enlist, but the reason that meant so much to him was because his father was an airplane pilot in World War II, shot down over the Pacific when my father was a toddler. He grew up hearing hero stories about his pilot father and how he was bravely killed in battle. I remember my dad telling me that only years after his combat experiences did he realize that he would actually stand up in firefights, somehow trying to die like his father, a hero. While going through my father's things after his death, I found an old newspaper article in his mother's Bible. It was written around 1944, within the year after my father lost his dad. Apparently, a local newspaper man met my grandmother and was impressed by her story. I would like to share it because the way she felt after losing her husband to war is how many women feel right now about their loss. There is always the future. This writer has met a real heroine. Her husband, not long ago, met death while fighting the enemies of his country. He had not long been gone from home. When he left, his last embraces were for his young wife and their small son. The widow says, "At our home, we do not cry. I always feel like crying, and sometimes, even when I am downtown, I catch myself on the point of breaking down. Then I tell myself I must be brave. If I did give way, it would set a bad example for myself, for my little boy who is just like his daddy, and those who are at home. Then, too, there are the other women who've had a loss like mine. I know they suffer as I do, and they do not let themselves break down. There is nothing any of us can do about it. If my husband had to go, death came as he would have had it to come, while he was fighting the enemy that he was sent to fight. At home, we laugh, joke, and tease each other as we used to. It is very hard, though, to appear gay when our hearts are so sad. My job now is to try and help our parents to get over the shock and to raise my little boy to be as near as possible as his father would want him to be. The baby remembers his father and some things he said just before he left us the last time. I am trying to keep alive in the baby's memory everything I can about his father and to keep my own chin up." In addition to the newspaper clipping, I found an old photograph of my father, maybe 4 or 5 years old, in a small military uniform, saluting for the camera. The caption below explained that the outfit he wore was made from one of his dead father's uniforms. He never spoke of this to me while he was alive, yet I cannot help but wonder how he felt about it all. Losing a loved one to war is the ultimate loss, and the effects of that loss are felt for generations. Of course, for any of you who have suffered such a loss, my heart goes out to you, and I understand that I cannot know what you are feeling. All I can say is this. For those children whose parent dies in battle, they have it especially hard, because in addition to the loss that they feel, through physical death their parent becomes a mythical hero, and there is no input into the hero myth by the vet himself. A one-sided hero myth is hard to live up to. At least my father found it to be so. I think he actually felt guilty for living through his war experience, since he was brought up by his southern mother to be just like his daddy. Children are at risk even when their loved one does come home, because children are not able to logically understand why their parent is hurting or different or wounded. As already mentioned, there are many things that are not spoken when a soldier returns home. Many veterans would never burden their children with such horrifying experiences, so nothing unpleasant is said. But understand that children pick up everything, even if they do not understand it. If your marriage is stressed, your children pick up on it. If you end up divorcing, your children will be affected by the experience. As adults now in wartime, we need to be especially sensitive to our children's emotional reactions to our adult and sometimes painful world. Number 5. No matter how great the desire to make the pain go away, masking the pain just doesn't work in the long run. So changing marriage partners or using medication won't erase grief. People get married for many reasons, and people in pain will do almost anything to not be in pain, so I can understand the desire to move on and make a new start if you need to. But if after using medication, either medically prescribed or self-medication, or after the second or third marriage, you find that your problems and pain are still with you, seek help. It is nothing to be ashamed of. Killing unleashes emotions few people are prepared to deal with. We help soldiers put those emotions and experiences away so they can go into battle the next day. Captain Robert Cardona, a psychiatrist with the Combat Stress Control Team based in southern Iraq. Number 6. How the veteran views their military contribution to society compared to cultural recognition of their contribution affects how severe their PTSD may be and how they deal with it. Since the dawn of human existence, people have found reasons to go to war with one another. Whether war is inherent in humanity, I do not know, but tribes, villages, and nations have always participated in the activity to prove male bravery, right perceived wrongs, and establish territory. So the question is not whether war as a concept is okay, but rather if a particular war is seen by the participating culture as justified and honorable. My opinion is that when killing someone or a group of people is seen as necessary to the warrior and his society, tribe, or family, his emotional aftermath is quite different than if the reason for killing is not seen as acceptable to the individual who is asked to do it. We as a culture might not like to think about killing that way, but I would argue that it's true. However, whether or not it's true is not the point. The point is how your soldier as an individual feels about his war experience and how this coincides with how his society views the same war. First, let's agree that exploding bombs, screams of terror, and being surrounded by death causes trauma no matter how the vet feels about the war. It is important, however, to understand how your veteran feels about being sent to this particular war, whichever one it might be, as well as the details about how the war is or was being fought. My father volunteered to go to Vietnam. However, one of his commendation awards he received was for a horrifying experience when, as a boat officer for a SEAL Marine amphibious landing, 3 out of 4 of his crew members were killed in front of him by enemy fire. Besides the guilt and pain he carried for the deaths, he was also angry. He wrote in a Veterans Administration PTSD questionnaire in 1994, quote, "I was filled with guilt and frustration and rage that my men were exposed to a high degree of danger with such an appalling lack of planning," unquote. When he expressed his frustration to his commanding officers, he was basically told to shut up and do his job. I only found out about this from reading letters that he wrote before his death. Apparently, being told that he didn't know enough to have an opinion negatively affected him all of his life. To bring this into the modern day for soldiers fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, whether a soldier agrees with the premise and execution of these wars does matter. When someone is asked to fight for a cause, one hopefully supports the cause and respects how it is handled. If not, expect that the veteran will have to go to great lengths, extra lengths, to come to terms with what he did in service to the United States. At any one time, more than 3,000 veterans are waiting for their first visit to the doctor. Those whose injuries from battle qualify them for disability compensation often wait 6 months to 2 years to receive it. Quote from Altered Lives by Timothy Dwyer, LA Times, Washington Post Service. When they come home hurt. While the military treats each wounded soldier with the latest technology in order to repair his body after damage has been done, the same level of care may not be as easily available once a soldier comes home. What happens if they don't get the continued care that they need when they need it? In addition to a physical wound, a veteran may have residual feelings about the wounding experience or about surviving it. As a loved one, the most important thing you can do for your wounded veteran is to assess the situation as to what the vet needs, and don't be afraid if they let out uncomfortable feelings about their situation. People tend to respond differently to pain and stress. While some might vent externally by expressing anger towards others, government officials, or themselves, others may internalize their emotions, showing signs of depression, sadness, or self-numbing behavior. Healing from war trauma is the most difficult thing they and you may ever deal with. If you see symptoms of PTSD in addition to their physical wounds, help them contact a mental health practitioner immediately. Number 7. If you find your loved one wearing their uniform in places that seem out of context, such as a costume party, the grocery store, or if they desire to wear the uniform for days at a time, assume that they might not be at peace with their war experience. As I went through my father's photographs, I was shocked to find 3 images of him in his military uniform at various company costume parties. The most striking was one of him in green, with what I would hope was a pretend rifle in hand, crouching behind a desk in an office, smiling for the camera. While it may have seemed funny or a little odd at the time, now, in context of knowing the extent of his PTSD, it is more disturbing than funny. If questioned about this kind of behavior, a vet might say, "I want to wear this, or do this, or feel this way. I know my dad would have resisted that there was anything wrong with him at the time." I honor the fact that coping with PTSD is a dramatic undertaking, and there is no right way to do it. So if you feel that you or your loved one needs help, connect with a qualified counselor. Number 8. Many will try to mask or numb pain. Without judgment, let me say that PTSD symptoms can increase with alcohol or substance medication abstinence. In no way do I condone substance dependence. However, if and when a vet stops using a substance that acts as a numbing agent and they suddenly have painful experiences, their incentive to continue their abstinence goes away. The emotional or physical pain might be stronger than the desire to be free from the substance. Also, whether they seek out a doctor's prescription of one mood-altering drug or another, or they decide to self-medicate with alcohol, over-the-counter sleep aids, or something else, understand that the specific desire to ward off nightmares is strong, considering that nightmarishly sleep-deprived nights are common for those who suffer from trauma. While I understand that my father's addiction was a major factor in my painful family experiences, now, looking back, I realize that it must have been difficult to be in the position to want to enjoy life, yet to have such painful emotions and to honestly not know what to do with them, except to try to make them go away. As I said before, my father became self-aware enough in his older years to say, "I know that I drink to numb my feelings." He did quit, a few times, yet he always seemed to reunite with his most consistent companion, alcohol. In my father's papers, I found a Veterans Administration assessment form quoting him and saying that his PTSD symptoms did increase during those times when he abstained. He also described his 30-year-old nightmares, which were usually the same. He would regularly wake up from dreaming about a VC in black pajamas who tried to slit his throat while he slept. Please remember that all medications, whether legal or illicit, are many times used to numb, mask, or suppress painful feelings. However, they never do, really, because the repressed emotions come out one way or another, as anger, depression, suicide. As chief sentry and caregiver, watch for moments when your vet is dealing with an emotional feeling, and do not run from these opportunities. Don't help them suppress emotions, thereby increasing the desire to partake in medication by responding in ways like, "Don't worry so much," "The past is the past," or "Don't talk about things like that." The way that your veteran will come to terms with his experiences, doubts, and pains is to express them. So don't be surprised when and if they stop using, their feelings will emerge and they will need to deal with them in a safe and purposeful manner. Also, be aware that PTSD symptoms increase or recur with triggers. A trigger can be an unexpected experience that reminds the veteran of a combat situation. One thing I do remember while growing up was that some movies upset my father enough that he had to leave the theater. Also, fireworks and loud noises startled him all of his life. "Being close to death warps a person's mind." A quote from my father's VA PTSD assessment form, 1994. Number 9. When a vet does express or display a desire for physical or emotional help. It is an unspoken rule that our culture does not want to talk or hear about unpleasantries. It seems to make people uncomfortable. But war is unpleasant, and if our goal is to help our veterans heal, then we need to become more able to deal with those things unpleasant. We have to be realistic and admit that the military establishment focuses on soldiers doing their jobs. Helping those same soldiers deal with the aftermath of doing those jobs is apparently not their priority. That could change if we make it so, but until that change happens, we have to work within the system that is available to us. This being the case, when your loved one expresses a need, the best thing to do is to help him find out how he can receive the help he needs. Yet remember that simply sending the vet to a program or to the authorities is not necessarily all it will take for him to heal. He has a much better chance if he has a support network, a community that can listen and accept him and his pains. A cry for help. Sometime in 1991, when I was 23 years old, I remember my father calling me at work, upset that he had not been able to find a job after he resigned from his last one. Right there on the phone, I told him that the reason he wasn't finding a job in the field he desired was because he looked like a drunk. Needless to say, he didn't take that very well. We hung up. A while later, he called me back and told me that he had almost just shot himself in the head, but he decided to call me instead. He asked me if I would take him to the local Veterans Administration alcohol recovery program. I agreed. We have to give soldiers a vocabulary to talk through emotions and teach them not to be embarrassed by troubling feelings. Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. how you can help. If you are a caregiver and/or a loved one, listen to your vet. Division psychologist Captain Mary Duriety of Camp Casey in South Korea has had many soldiers rotate there from combat theaters in Iraq and Afghanistan. She has found that among the soldiers with PTSD, one of the most common complaints is not having people to talk about it with. Take matters into your own hands. You can become an amateur expert about PTSD. Find a book, ask questions, and read websites to familiarize yourself with symptoms and common experiences. Do not ignore the problems, and don't encourage the vet to ignore them either. However, the vet may feel overwhelmed by the problem and not know what to do. Remember that for their entire military experience, soldiers have been told to buck up, get over it, and be a man or warrior. There may be some reluctance on the part of a veteran to go against this ingrained advice and share their feelings. He may feel that there will be negative repercussions because of his request for help. Whether or not this happens, stand by him however you can. Always, the best way you can help is to be a supportive witness to your loved one's pain, because pain is nothing to be ashamed of, even for tough and brave soldiers. Dealing with the unspeakable. A horrifying part of war is that it sets the stage for soldiers to commit unspeakable acts. What happens to a soldier's mind when he participates in killing the innocent? How does one feel when he accidentally, or purposefully, kills women or children? Where do these actions fit into the idea of a just and honorable war? I can only imagine that these moments stay with a veteran forever and are exceptionally difficult to deal with. So, as a loved one, especially if you are a woman, be aware that there may be parts of your veteran's experience that he is particularly reluctant to think about, let alone speak about them. A note to fathers, grandfathers, male mentors, and friends. It's time for absolute honesty. As a woman, I am well aware that an important rule in male culture, whether spoken or not, is to never do anything that will make you seem like a woman. Whether you are in military culture or not, I am positive that you and 90% of all the men you know are very careful not to act feminine, at least around other men. Most high on the list of feminine qualities? To cry and show emotion. Am I wrong? I think not. But let me tell you, brothers, for your sons and grandsons and friends that are veterans, the best thing you can do for them and yourself is to be brave enough to feel what you both feel. If that means either of you feel the need to cry, cry. Your veteran may feel confused. He may feel angry or sad without knowing how to deal with his feelings. So, if a veteran's male loved ones can show him that to cry, if his heart wants to, is to be a strong man, it will help him heal. War is an incredibly sad experience. Young male soldiers need emotionally expressive older men to show them the way. So be willing to cry together. Cry in front of him. Let him cry in front of you without stopping the experience out of embarrassment. It may feel difficult, but crying is the body's physical outlet for emotional grief, for men as well as women. If that outlet is denied because of an inappropriate cultural belief, everyone loses. Number 10. As soon as possible, ask the returned vet, "Are you resolved with what happened?" Since every human being is different, the only way to get an idea of how someone feels about something is to ask. It is appropriate and desirable to begin dialogue and discussion as soon as possible after a soldier's return. The tendency may be to not want to talk about difficult things, but my experience tells me that once silence has begun, it is much more difficult down the road to implement an open dialogue. So, find the right time and ask your vet how he feels about his experiences in war. Why ask this? This question will offer the vet, as well as the questioner, an opportunity to think about how he feels about his situation. If, when asked, your vet reacts angrily, that tells you something, even though he didn't tell you something specific. If he starts to cry, that tells you something. If he thoughtfully tells you how he feels, then you know how he feels, in that moment. Asking this question offers an opportunity to find out about where one hurts, both physically and emotionally. As a questioner, if your vet's answer, whatever it is, overwhelms you or makes you feel like shutting down, that tells you something about your ability to take in uncomfortable information. While our culture may teach otherwise, talking about feelings is never a bad thing. It may be uncomfortable, but feeling unresolved is worse. It's important for vets to know that whatever they feel is the way they feel. It is not wrong. If they are afraid, okay. If they are sad or confused, okay. It in no way means that they are less of a warrior or that they are weak. They have gone through a traumatic experience. Humans are feeling beings. Trauma makes people feel many things. Everyone can heal with some help. I would like to share 5 things that I have learned by watching and working with my father and seeing how his experiences affected my family. Number 1. There is a place for everyone. No one is so unworthy as to not have a place. I listed this concept first out of the following 5 because I think it is so important. Yet I have found myself writing all the other sections first, leaving this one to the last. Somehow it is the most difficult to explain, and in a way the most important. So why is this one so difficult? This concept includes folks trying to love and have families, and honestly, what happens if it doesn't work out? In war, people do things that they might never do in real life. Many who come home are filled with guilt and shame about their experiences, about what they did, or maybe what they didn't do. When soldiers leave combat, they want to put all that behind them, find love, or come back to their love, and move on. But love is a strange thing. In order to love, one must open their heart to another person. This is very difficult to do if there are things in one's heart that one does not want revealed. While the human ability to couple and get together lustfully and lovingly is great, that phase always transforms into everyday love, and while the woman or the non-veteran may remain open-hearted towards their partner after the honeymoon period, the vet may suddenly or slowly seem incapable of remaining open, which can lead to feelings of anger or bewilderment on the part of the marriage partner and more guilt or shame for the veteran. In addition to any issues of PTSD in the marriage mix, we live in a culture where 50% of married couples divorce. Marriage is a gamble, no matter with whom you try it, PTSD or not. So, what if it doesn't work out? Who's to blame? Whose fault is it that the person who once seemed open and loving is now closed and distant? This is a difficult issue to talk about because people, veterans and non-veterans, get married for many reasons, and many times it just doesn't work out. I have no answers to this dilemma. I only have a few suggestions from my own family experience to keep in mind for those partners and children who can't understand why it is the way it is. For all of you who are children of veterans or adult children of veterans of past wars, if your parents divorce or your father leaves your family, understand this. Your father acts towards you as he feels about himself. Don't automatically assume that you are the problem or unwanted or somehow flawed. Whether your father admits it or not, if he went through a war, his heart is sad. If his marriage did not work out with your mother, he feels like a failure. He's embarrassed that it didn't work out, and honestly, you may remind him of his failure at being married with your mom. He may have even remarried and now has a new family. My advice is, don't take it personally. Hard to do, I know, but try, because believe me, it is not you. Try reaching out to him. Be willing to be honest with him. Don't be afraid to tell him how you feel, and be open to hear how he feels. Yet don't take it personally if he can't or won't open to you. It is not your fault. One does not have to die to be a casualty of war. I call this section, There is a Place for Everyone, because after surviving combat, a veteran's place may not be with his family. Being in a family requires one to be open-hearted, and that may be too painful for some. My father was a good father, yet as the years went on, he became more and more emotionally distant from those with whom he lived. Finally, after tiring of living in an alcoholic marriage, my mother asked for a separation from my father. As each year passed after the divorce, his relationship with his children dwindled more and more until it got to that horrible place of him wanting to call, yet he felt guilty for not doing what he should have done in the past, so he didn't call, once again. As I watched my dad cry about this many times in his last years, yet still not call, I realized that regret is a torturing emotion. So many men, whether they ever set foot in the military, seem to have difficulty in this area of life. but my focus here is on those men who have an extra monkey on their backs, which is PTSD, a devastating syndrome that can eat away at the most tender-hearted man and contribute to him feeling like a failure in the sacred domain of fatherhood and love. For wives of veterans and wives-to-be, it is time for honesty. Any woman who wants to marry a man today has to understand that it is a 50-50 gamble. This might sound harsh, but for a woman to enter into a love relationship blinded to the fact that the cards are stacked against till death do us part is plainly naive. Every woman needs to look at the man they love honestly, their strengths as well as their challenges. If you are with a veteran, assume that on one level or another, your lover has a broken heart because war is heartbreaking. You and the love you bring to him may be able to heal his heart sadness, and it may not. Of course, it is absolutely possible to partner with a veteran in a loving and open relationship. Love can heal many wounds. However, if for whatever reason your paths do diverge, I would hope for everyone's sake that each person involved is supported in their healing and quest to find their place. I know it is difficult to be civil when one is hurting, but no matter how disappointed or frustrated you are by your marriage experience, remember that no one is so unworthy as to not have a place. If the veteran's place ends up not being with you and you have children together, I must beg of you, do not speak of deficiencies of the vet as a man in front of or to his children. It only causes more problems for everyone involved. Children do not understand the intricacies of adult relationships, so if they grow up hearing only your perspective as a woman, wife, or lover about their father, it will color their perceptions about him as a man, which they should be able to create for themselves over time. Also, if the father knows how you speak of him to his children, it affects his self-esteem, which makes it more likely that he will resist participating in his children's lives. Strange, I know, but unfortunately, oftentimes, it is true. Divorce is painful and difficult. If you have to go through this harrowing experience, please remember that you are the adult. If you find yourself disappointed, angry, or frustrated with your partner, spare your children the adult details, even if they're teenagers. Instead, talk to another adult. If you do not have an adult to talk to, fix that problem for yourself. Remember that what your children experience in your marriage, as well as divorce, will affect their lives and their own path to love for a very long time. Number 2. Change can happen. The reason my father didn't die a more depressing death than he did was because he made the choice to live, and then he became open to the idea that his life could change. As a 60-year-old man, he became interested in the 200-year anniversary of Lewis and Clark's journey west. His plan was that when he began receiving his Social Security, he would travel the Lewis and Clark Trail around the northwestern states, collecting information and experiences. He was supposed to travel the trail during the summer of 2004. However, he died the March before, so I decided to travel parts of the trail myself with the box of my father's ashes between the front seats of my van, so he can say he went on his big trip. I guess the point was not for my father to physically travel where Lewis and Clark had explored 200 years ago. The point was for him to want to do it. And his inspiration inspired me to travel in his attendant footsteps and to write this. As my dad would often say at the end of his life, old dogs can learn new tricks. Number 3. You have to say yes to something, not just no to something, to change behavior. My experience, both in dealing with my father as well as my own healing, has taught me that in order to move beyond a sad or painful time in one's life, one needs something positive to move towards. Whether it is a way to share one's experience with others, being in service, or to immerse oneself in a positive project, in order to truly heal, a person needs to fill the empty hole of pain with something life-affirming, something that can help heal the old wound a little bit each day. Honestly, for some, the goal may be to feel a little better, most days. Number 4. War changes people, period. As relatives and loved ones of veterans, we must understand that the normal of before their war experience simply doesn't exist afterwards. A new normal needs to be created. This can be said in a short sentence, yet it takes a lifetime to create. If you ever need an affirmation or mantra in the difficult times to help you understand what in the world is going on, remind yourself, war changes people, period. Number 5. Demand the right to heal. Each individual and family in every culture deserves the right to heal the wounds of war. Since everyone who participates in war, no matter how they personally feel about it, is affected, helping our soldiers, who are also our fathers, sons, daughters, lovers, and friends, heal their bodies, hearts, and minds is a necessity, not a privilege. By now we have been shown that the military does not help the soldiers deal with what they are experiencing while doing their tour of duty, so the healing must begin once they come home. This makes healing a group effort. My advice? Be bold, be persistent, be the squeaky wheel. Do whatever it takes to get some help and do not feel ashamed for asking. Demand the right to heal the wounds caused by the war machine. If we do not, my father was diagnosed with chronic, moderate PTSD. I wonder about all the men and women diagnosed, or more importantly, undiagnosed, with severe symptoms. They are our problem and responsibility as well. War-traumatized people of any nation are more likely to recreate their trauma by recreating war over and over, generation after generation. If not healed, this painful legacy will be felt for many more generations to come. As I said in the beginning, a person's ability to heal the past is affected by a number of things, including the personality of the veteran, their life circumstances, and the level of support that they have. How is it that my father reacted to life by drinking alcohol and crumbling before my eyes when it seems that other veterans with even more horrific experiences have lived peaceful lives with seemingly no regrets? I don't know. Is it fate, karma, luck? Yes and no. In the healing formula of personality, circumstance, and support, I know now that my father did not have a strong support network to help him deal with the feelings he had. I am also aware that my father had a personality that he himself described as prideful, especially as a young man. The following quote is from the transcript of the hearing in 1994 when my father petitioned the VA for hearing aids. He was describing why it took him so long to ask for help. I took an over amount of pride in my own self-reliance. I would not admit that I had any problems. Looking back, I should have done things differently. I realize that now, but it has taken me a long time to get to the point of understanding what I should have done. It has taken me a long time to grow up. The desire to understand the past is a strong one, and sometimes a futile one. I only hope that we as a culture can increase our learning curve so that another generation of daughters and sons, just like me, don't have to spend the next 30 years coming to terms with what has happened to their families. Will they have to spend decades healing their hearts and mourning their physically and emotionally broken parents? I suppose only time will tell. I will leave the final words to my father, a quote that I found after his death as he was coming to terms with the war in Iraq and how he felt about it as a veteran of another war 3 decades before. I have doubts about this war, as I had similar doubts about the war in Vietnam. As an officer in the Navy, I raised questions 35 years ago and was told, "Shut up and do your job. You don't have the big picture." Well, I had a big picture then, and now, at age 60, I have a mural in mind that includes answers to the questions in my heart. I finally know that while the government may not want to listen, what I think is right for me. I wish your veteran and your family and our culture, peace. To order this story as a 60-page illustrated book, or to find out about wholesale and military prices, please contact me through acceptingtheashes.net. And thanks to rainbowdidge.com for use of their music in this project.